do you love about the craft beer industry? Is it the liquids, the creativity, or perhaps the physical breweries themselves? For me, it's the people, and more specifically, the stories they have to tell. I love hearing them, but sharing them with you is even better. I'm Chris Lukianenko. Welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews. Sometimes in this game that we call craft beer, our hobbies can get a little bit out of hand. And before you know it, that hobby that once saw you making a very average kit and kilo beer with your Cooper's brewing kit from Big W suddenly sees you surrounded by stainless steel, pumping out quality beers that were once the thing that dreams were made of. My guest on this episode, while he has followed his dream and turned plastic into stainless, he hasn't done it on a huge scale just yet. And that's just how he likes it. This is about the community. Mortdale is the location where my guest chose to chase his dream. It's about 10 kilometres southwest from the craft beer mecca known as the inner west of Sydney. But that's just fine. This is about community, as I said, not adding another stop on Dave's Brewery's tours. The Social Brewers is coming up on its first birthday soon, and founder and head brewer Bo Curtis has been pretty bloody busy the last 12 months. So, to tell us all about it and how this whole thing got started, welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews, Bo Curtis.
G'day, mate. How are you?
Great to finally have you here, mate. Thank you for jumping on.
No dramas.
Coming up on your first birthday at Social Brewers, how are you celebrating? I'm picturing 500 guests, DJs all night, promo girls, mirror balls. That sounds like your style, doesn't it?
Yeah, mate, absolutely right up our alley. I think it'll be a very, very small affair. And, you know, hopefully we get 50-odd people. We're still planning exactly what we're doing, but yeah, we're gonna have something at the tap room and just kind of make a night of it because it's a Friday night, St. Paddy's Day, 17th of March, so should be a good one.
Nice, cheers! Just smashing open the Strider's Session Ale,
mate. I'll
just take it easy on a Monday night, being it's a work night.
But, the same.
So, mate, it's been a pretty big year, hasn't it?
It's been insane. You know, when I told friends and family of what I was planning, they all looked at me like I was completely insane. And maybe they're right. After the last 12 months, we've had a bunch of stuff thrown at us. And I say us, I always use kind of this collective language. And I think that comes from when I started kind of promoting the brewery and what it was going to be locally.
Yep.
I felt almost like embarrassed that it was just me, and you know, I'm literally it. Like it's, you know, I'm brewing, I'm marketing, I'm everything. So, it's a habit that I've gotten into, but I'm trying to get out of it because I should be taking a great deal of pride, I think, out of it.
Yeah. You know,
to go, I did it myself, but yeah. it's hard to get used to.
Well, I agree with you. We'll get into all the details because we've got to do a little bit of backtracking, I suppose, but. But 1 year on, are you feeling great about your decision to chase this craft beer dream?
Absolutely. Yep.
Good.
Without a doubt.
Good.
Mate, I often have people say to me, oh, I spent 24 years in marketing and media and, you know, people always say, oh, so how have you been finding it? You know, do you ever miss going to the office and, you know, whipping up a media plan? And I just look at them and go, no. Even on the worst day in the brewery, it's better than a good day, I should say, in the office. So I'm very happy I did it.
You were a bit of a high flyer, weren't you, in the marketing game?
I don't know about a high flyer. I worked on some high profile businesses.
Was it Samsung you were with for a while?
Yeah, so prior to I did a little stint of contracting, but prior to that I was at Samsung for about 5 years.
Yeah, okay.
And there's a saying at Samsung that, you know, you kind of make it past 3 years and it means you're gonna be there forever.
Yep.
I wasn't there forever. I got made redundant. Just before I was there 5 years, so just under 5 years.
Wouldn't have been the worst thing in the world. Would it take a nice little package and piss off?
Oh, mate, the package wasn't as nice as I would have liked, but it certainly was the impetus and the momentum that I think I needed just to really give me a shove.
Yep.
I'd been quietly tinkering away on plans and, you know, had ordered equipment and bits and pieces while I was still working there.
Yeah,
And I was pretty open with them, maybe too open about what I was planning. So I think when the restructure happened in the marketing team that I was in, it was kind of like, well, you know, he's got something to go to anyway. So
yeah.
You know, he'll probably be happy.
I'm hearing you. I'm a heart on my sleeve kind of guy, and often I'm just way too honest for my own good. So
yeah. It gets you into trouble at times, but that's
I think I'm just going to be honest with these people. They'll treat me right. And no, sometimes you've got to look out for number one. And as my wife tells me, sometimes you've got to play your cards a little bit closer to your chest, Chris.
Yeah, I've never been good at that either, mate.
No, me neither. So would you call yourself an early adopter of this whole craft beer thing?
No way. Absolutely not. I think it's a fairly well-worn path. There's a truckload of breweries out there now, both physical and imaginary. Did I just say that right? for better or worse. And it was more about looking at it and saying, what doesn't exist in this market? And I think the biggest thing for me was where we are in Mortdale, and I live around the corner in Peakhurst. We are right in between two spots with a few craft breweries. So there's obviously Botany to the north, which is, One Drop's probably the best known one, and Slow Lane banging out some absolutely cracking beers.
Ripping beers.
And then down south, the guys at Sunday Road, Shark Island and Hairy Man.
Yep.
Doing their thing.
Yep.
So we are smack in the middle of those two areas.
Yeah.
And it used to get referred to quite a bit as the craft beer wasteland.
Oh, right.
For a long time you couldn't find craft beer anywhere around here.
Shit.
Outside of, one or two good bottle shop or one good bottle shop and one local club in Riverwood that has actually a craft beer bar. And they had a really good guy running that who was, he sourced some really good stuff for that bar. So aside from that, though, there was nothing.
Yeah, shit. Do you remember the beer that converted you over to this whole thing?
I don't think it was one beer. It was probably a few different experiences. I mean, I went to Oktoberfest in Germany. That was probably a part of it.
That'll probably do it.
Yeah, it was good time. I can't remember a lot of it. I do remember that I went to Dachau concentration camp the next day with a mad hangover. That was a heavy, heavy day, man. That's one life lesson right there. But it, going over the years, going to Red Oak and places like that in Sydney, we actually, before we moved to this area, we lived in Newtown. Our first house was in Newtown. And we lived around the corner from a number of, we could throw a stone and hit sort of two or three breweries at the time.
Yeah, nice.
And that was when Batch was just starting. That was when, Grifter, I think, had just opened. So we're talking sort of 13, 14 years ago.
Yeah.
And there wasn't a lot there. So, those guys opened. I remember the feeling of walking into Batch the first time and just thinking, wow, this is cool. And just going, you can get all these amazing beers and, drink it by the stainless and sit on an old sofa that someone had thrown in the corner. It was just that really kind of
out of the jam jars. I think it was
jam jars. Yeah, they've classed it up now.
Yeah,
but it was that sense of discovery, and that I think that was what appealed to me most.
Yep.
But I had probably more exposure than most to, I suppose, the craft beer revolution as it happened, because as my brother Wade.
Big brother.
Was well and truly on the start of the trend.
Yeah.
Funnily enough, I was at Black Ops 2 a couple of weeks ago. I went up to the Gold Coast and was at BH2 and saw the original artwork or an artwork from their Bandwagon beer. It's got my brother's mug on it, which was quite fun, seeing stuff like that. So I sometimes forget that, he kind of trod this path, and I watched it from a distance down here in Sydney. We talked quite a bit when he was involved in opening the Pump Yard in Four Hearts. We talked about quite a bit. I said, wouldn't it be cool if I did something down here and you were doing that up there, and we could kind of, we could send beer backwards and forwards, and basically I could cheat and use all his recipes. And I thought that'd be a cool idea. And I actually went so far as to start looking into venues at that stage.
Yep.
But he subsequently got out of the Pump Yard and Four Hearts. Business. So it was kind of like, right. And that sort of put my plans in the back burner for a bit.
Hey, time for a quick break. Don't worry, I won't take long. If you like this story and want to hear more, please subscribe via your favourite podcast service so that you are notified of new episodes. You can also rate the podcast on Apple and Spotify to help others find it. And if you don't follow me on the socials, check me out. I think I go all right over there. Now, back to the story. Hey. And what about, like, with the whole home brewing thing? You mentioned you could steal his recipes. Like, were you a dabbler like I was, or were you one of those guys that, you know, had the deluxe set up in the garage, like my mate Ben Miller? Shout out to Ben, you know, where you got all the bloody fancy stainless steel things, you know, the non-oxygenated transfers and all that sort of shit. Was that you?
So I had never brewed before I decided that I was going to actually open a brewery.
Get out.
That's
what they call flying blind. Were you an idiot? Yeah,
to some yes. No, but you know, I mean, and we're talking, you know, 4 or 5 years ago when I just made the decision that I was going to do it. So I gave myself a pretty good runway to actually learn how to brew. And I knew that I had some reasonable kind of experience in my pocket as well with weight to be able to ring and say, mate, I'm thinking of doing this. What should I do? What should I buy? Yep. And he just sort of said to me, look, you just need to nail the process. You just need to get your head around all that stuff. It's not about equipment. It's about just having the right understanding and skill set of the steps in the process.
Yep.
So I went out and bought a 35-litre all-in-one kit from Kegland, I think, and just started having a go. Just, you know, downloaded a couple of recipes, got used to the idea of what I was doing. All the first stuff that I did was, you know, clone recipes of – you know, fat tire, amber ale, and bits and pieces like that.
Bell's too hearted, perhaps.
No. I just sort of after the amber was the first one that I really went, okay, I'm going to follow someone else's recipe and with an intention of making a beer that's kind of the same. From that point onwards, I just went, okay, what's a basic standard ass recipe for a Hefeweizen or a whole bunch of different things that I just, you know, an IPA. And then I started going, okay, well, right, I've got that down. They're tasting pretty good and people seem to enjoy them when I'm, you know, force-fed them to them. I've got a couple of mates. My best mate, Benny, he's my chief lab rat. Basically, he gets free beer and I get to say, well, would you pay for it? his answer for a long time was probably not. But you know, over the sort of 3 or 4 or 5 years that I was doing that for, progressively his answers became more, actually, you know, I would.
Yep.
And that was when I started to go, okay, well, what's a twist I can do on an IPA? What's a, you know, a really good, solid, easy drinking session ale that I can brew? And started to think of my own recipes, but they're all kind of, the jumping off point was always like, what beer have I had in that style that I really enjoy?
That's a good way to go about it.
It wasn't to mimic them. It was more just to, I guess, go, right, well, I really enjoy a beer that tastes like that. How can I get somewhere close? And then what tweaks can I make I won't say improve on it, or just change it, you know?
It's not lost on me how much of a huge career shift this is for you. You're not as old as me, but Let's get real here. You're not a kid. You've got a wife. You've got responsibilities.
Yep.
Why at 30 odd did you think this was just such a great time to make such a big change? Was this like a one-third life crisis or something like that?
Well, I was 40.
Are you that old?
Yeah, mate. I'm 45. I don't hide that.
Oh shit. Okay. Well, I'm only 47, so we're about the same. I was crediting you with your baby face there.
Oh mate, baby faced assassin. That's why I grew a beard. well, and that was kind of, mate, I had a beard, I had a tattoo. The next logical step was to become a brewer. It was a confluence of events. I'd already been thinking about it, kind of wanting to do my own thing. I'd had a bunch of ideas for businesses over the years. I've got a mate who we have a Google Drive folder. It's called Harebrained Schemes. and essentially it was every time we'd get together and have a couple of beers, we'd come up with another stupid idea and go, oh, I wonder if we could, you know, build up an MVP of this and take it to market and test it and see if it would actually fly. And we got a fair way down the track on 2 or 3 different occasions.
Oh, wow.
Until I went, I think I'm going to open a brewery. And he just looked at me and went, I don't know the first thing about doing that. And I was like, yeah, I've got a few people who do though, so you know, it should somebody. Be okay.
And what about pitching that idea to your wife? How did that go?
Well, as I said, there was a number of times that I, you know, and she, I would belt her ears about every idea that I had. It was always like, oh, we're thinking about this. What do you reckon? And she'd always just look at me and go, you're nuts. Like, go away. Stop talking to me. Eventually with the brewery though, she just looked at me one day and you know, the other thing that happened, I guess, is, what, 4.5 years, coming up on 5 years ago, I actually had a cardiac arrest.
Shit.
So an out of hospital cardiac arrest. So,
Oh, that shakes you, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Playing soccer on a Saturday, came home, went to the backyard with the kids, kicked a ball for a bit, came inside, collapsed on the kitchen floor.
Shit.
My wife did, and a neighbor did 8 minutes of CPR and saved my life.
Oh, fuck. Oh, Jesus.
So, yeah, I'll never win an argument again in my house.
No. You got to pay her back forever.
Yeah, absolutely. But, so that was kind of in the back of my head, and I'd gone back to
Europe. I can see why that would make you think, I don't care about the small shit anymore, you know, life is short kind of thing. Let's just do it.
Yeah, and it was, you know, if not now, then when?
Yeah.
And that's kind of something that I've picked up. You know, you can kind of think about things for a long time, and you can go, oh, you know, this area would be great for a brewery. There's a demand for craft beer or an interest in craft beer, I should say. You know, I wish someone would do it. And, you know, I just sort of thought, why not? Why not me? Like,
yeah.
Why isn't it me that does this? And eventually, yep. Kaz, my wife, just said to me, look, will you stop talking about it and just go and do it? Like, I'm sick of hearing about these ideas.
Quit
if you're
your
really
engine.
That keen, just do it. And I looked at her and I was like, that sounds like permission to me. And she went, well, you know, show me how it can be done. So I built the business plan. I'd already had quite a few things in the back of my head sort of ticking over.
Yep.
And one of the things she said to me was like, you know, I don't question your understanding of business and your ability yep. to put a marketing plan together and knowing the audience and stuff like that, because it's, you know, as same with you, you know, that's what I do all day or
yeah.
do all day.
Yep.
It was more, how are you going to actually run a venue? How, you know, I've never worked in hospitality, right?
I was going to say that is a lesson in itself, isn't it? How to run a bloody tap room or
absolutely. Still learning.
Yeah. I love the fact that you said I built the business plan, because as I've mentioned a billion times before, like often, I don't think so much anymore, but back in the day, it was like, I love beer, I want to brew it, let's go. And business plans was seen as more like a bit of an annoyance for some people, or just something like really light that you didn't really put as much effort into as maybe. But I think now, it's probably a little bit harder to get the money and all that sort of thing, and it's good to do that.
Absolutely, mate. I would, anyone listening to this thinking about doing their own, opening their own brewery, no matter how big or small, you need a business plan. You need to know the numbers. You need to know how big your audience is. Yep. And I think that's, you know, my marketing training drummed that into me very much so, is know the audience size, give it a number that you need to convert in order to do it. And I had numbers coming out of my numbers at one stage. And I would speak to, you know, people who I know in finance, and I would say, you know, these are the numbers. This is what it looks like. This is how it stacks up. And my brother-in-law was actually a financial advisor for a long time. And he looked at me and he said, I've never heard anyone speak about a business proposal and know the numbers the way you do. And I was just like, well, it's got to work. Like it's on me if it doesn't. And that was my whole drive to run my own business was, you know, I want it to succeed or fail based on my ability and understanding.
Yep. Yeah, nice.
So, you know, and then the redundancy at my previous job kind of came after all of that, and I'd already decided that I was pretty had it with corporate life after the cardiac arrest and recovery and going back to work. And the job that I had was fantastic. I travelled a lot, you know. I think even after the cardiac arrest, I was in Paris, London, New York, Singapore, several. Like I kept doing what I was doing before I got. Say I got sick. I've got a condition, a hereditary condition I didn't know I actually had.
Which caused the heart attack, did it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
So I say I got sick, but I've always had a heart condition. Just didn't know.
Yeah, okay.
So, you know, when I went back to work and kind of recovered from that episode, I just didn't have an interest and a passion for it anymore. I couldn't see myself doing it day in, day out. So that was kind of the kicker.
I get that. Can absolutely relate. Important question. These days, are you a Apple or a Samsung phone user?
I'm a Google user.
The old Pixel. You've dumped them both.
Yeah, I couldn't bring myself to get an Apple, and working at Samsung, I couldn't bring myself to buy a Samsung either. I was like, I can't. Fair enough. So I converted to Google.
You can see me. I'm sitting here tonight with my knee up on my chair. I've just looked down and I'm bleeding. I've just come before I got here. I was getting my beer glass to have this beer with you tonight, and I had one of those. I think they're called nucleated. The Guinness pint glasses with a nice shape and everything. Yep. I kid you not, I was literally holding it in my hand and it just fucking exploded on me. Because it breaks like safety glass. Like it didn't get me in the eye, but I've just noticed. Obviously, it's cut me on my leg, and if I die on this microphone tonight from blood loss, you'll know why. But I'm okay. Yeah.
I mean, I survived, so,
Yeah, true. Hopefully you will too. I can relate. We've both got health issues. Come on, let's not get too involved in it. Hey, I haven't been to the venue because I haven't been to Sydney in God knows how fucking long. I've only seen the pictures, but it feels like you've sort of gone for a fairly simple warehouse kind of aesthetic with, brick walls, timbers, metal, I think a bit of upcycling. Tell me about that design. Was it yours? Was it a cost-saving effort? Or did that building you picked just suit with that look?
A little bit of all three, mate, to be honest. So I hunted this area for a building that I could see the brewery in. So I literally went.
So it wasn't just that'll do, there's a warehouse.
Absolutely not.
No.
Industrial property in this area is very highly sought after because it is a little pocket of industrial that doesn't – it's surrounded by residential, which is one of the reasons I liked it. But the opportunities to get places in that little pocket are very few and far between. On top of that, there's a whole bunch of them that are built in the 60s, so they're all full of asbestos.
Asbestos.
Asbestos roof sheets, walls, the lot. There was another property that I was very, very keen on that would have been a very different look and feel, much more outdoor. But it had a massive asbestos shed with a big warning sign on the side of it.
That's never a good sign.
No, and the owner wasn't keen on demolishing it take it. Yeah, well, I put it to them and just said, look, here's the offer. The offer I'll give you if you take that back shed out.
Yep.
And they never returned my calls. So that sealed the deal. And then I saw the place that we're in, and originally it had the old red oxide metal beams right through it. It's got a movable gantry. Like it's got some really cool little features in it that you don't find in a lot of places. And I spent the first, it was originally or previously a custom joinery, high-end custom joinery factory.
Oh, yep.
It hadn't been cleaned in 25 years. There was about 3 inches of sawdust on top of those beams. So the first, I think, 3 months we spent just cleaning the dust out of the place.
Yep.
It's probably asbestos dust as well. So I just don't want to think about what sort of damage I've potentially done to myself. I survived one health scare. I'll be right.
You're invincible.
I'm
now.
Essentially invincible. That's right. I've got an implanted defib as well. So I'm part man, part machine anyway.
Oh, look out. $6 million man.
Yeah, totally. Iron Man. I found that venue or that building. I could kind of visualize the brewery in there. And I knew what I wanted to do. So we painted all the metal black. We kept the nice kind of red brick walls and we decked it out with timber. And whatever we had in terms of, I've just got stainless bar and then there's a bench that we actually repurposed the stair treads from the old set of stairs that was in the building because we had to upgrade those.
Yep.
When I pulled those stairs out, they didn't take much to come down, so it was a bit scary, to be honest. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to reuse those treads. So I was like, I want to remember almost dying on these stairs. So, the aesthetic is – and it was also a cost saving because you know, I'm 100% self-funded. I don't have any big financial backers. I wanted to do it on my own, at least up until kind of, you know, I had the place running. Because I didn't want to take money on from anyone to back what was essentially a fairly crazy idea in terms of, you know, old me with no hospitality experience and, you know, 5 years home brewing under his belt.
You had that fat redundancy to fall back on.
I wish. So it was essentially right. Okay, well let's remortgage the house and see what we can get.
Yep.
And every cent that we were able to get, we got and put into the brewery.
Those Kmart black stools work well, don't they?
Mate, they're fantastic.
I'll get them in my house.
they're Office Works ones, but anyway.
They look exactly the same as my Kmart ones.
They're cheaper. We built the brewery to a price
that's a good way to do it. I like it.
Absolutely. Look, it was basically, as my wife put it, like when we moved to Newtown, I said to my wife, I'm going to ride to work every day, right? So I want to buy a really nice pushy. And she said, nah, get one from eBay for $200. And after 6 months, if you've ridden more than you've got the bus, you're allowed to go and buy a new bike.
Fair call.
And essentially I did the same thing with the brewery. Like it was a case of, right, we'll get the best possible brew kit for a budget.
Yep.
Spend money on the tanks because, you know, when you're fermenting in stuff, you want it to be good quality. Yeah. So I got good tanks. But the brew kit itself is essentially, I like to call it a home brew kit on steroids. I mean, it's a little three vessel made by the guys down at Cheeky Peak in Wodonga. And you know, it didn't cost a lot at all. Oh, but
that's the homebrew crew.
Yep.
It really is. So
yeah, absolutely. Well, they're making this one's a 230-liter system.
Okay. Yep.
And we've got 400-liter fermenters. So I double batch pretty much every brew day, which is fairly brutal, but
days.
Mate, yeah, they are. Like when I first started, I think it was taking me, and again, I hadn't worked in a commercial brewery before I opened one.
Yeah.
So I was making every mistake known to man at the start. I think my first double batch took me 15 and a half hours.
Oh, Jesus. Sing it with me now. The things you do for love.
Mate, absolutely. And I thought it was Jesus. Awesome.
Whoa, 15 hours.
And you know, mate, I still, every like my NEPA that I brew, that's still a 13-hour brew day just because it's such a thick, rich beer.
That's why I've never done this. I don't have that attention span. I just couldn't do it.
Yeah, well, look, I've gotten better at timing stuff. I've got it down to about 10 for a double batch now. So there's still time savings there. I'm looking at some cooling improvements and bits and pieces that'll take hopefully an hour or so off that. So
yeah, nice.
Yeah.
And then sort of once you got yourself sorted, you're done, you're ready to open, you got hit with some pretty significant COVID restrictions in terms of visitor numbers, is that right?
So the COVID thing was right at the end of our fit out. So it took 9 months in council, which is not long compared to some others.
Yep.
But it was longer than I really wanted it to take. considering it was a simple change of use and it ticked a bunch of boxes and I could point down at Sutherland and point up to Marrickville and say, ask them, they've done it.
Yeah.
But councils don't like talking to other councils apparently.
Nah.
And then, yeah, so like COVID was there the whole time. I was, because it was pretty much just me and maybe one or two other mates, we managed to work the restrictions to our advantage and be able to go and do things. It was within 5Ks of home, so I never had to not go in there when there was stuff to do.
And it was probably good for you that you didn't open, say, October, November, just before, like, you know, 5-6 months before when you did, because that's when, in talking to some of the other guys in around Sydney, where they effectively lost a summer, didn't they, that year?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, look, I mean, realistically, we lost that summer too because we couldn't get trades to finish stuff to get our final.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Yeah.
So, and the other part of that that I think people forget is because I hadn't started trading, right? I'd still invested all this money. I hadn't started trading. I was still paying rent.
No revenue.
I wasn't, I wasn't eligible for any of the government subsidies.
Oh, really?
Because I couldn't demonstrate a loss of revenue.
Oh, shit.
So yeah, okay. there's me going, it's costing me money too. And the government just went, prove it. And I was like, fair. I can't prove it, you know. So that was kind of, I mean, it didn't feel like it hurt at the time, but looking back, it would have been nice to have that, that summer, even the interrupted summer that it was in Sydney, to be able to, you know, to wholesale or to sell cans, takeaways and things like that.
Because
I had already done a batch in the September with Willie the Boatman, a contract brewed out there.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Did a batch of Striders out of those guys who are absolute legends. So I had beer in the cold room and I could sell it, but no one really could buy it. That was the issue. So I didn't have a venue for them to buy it from.
And so when you opened up, how many people were allowed to come in and enjoy a beer?
Yeah, so that was – so one of the fun parts of the local council not really understanding what we were doing is that they thought 50% of people that visited the tap room would drive. So as a result, I had to be able to accommodate half of my capacity in car spaces. So that meant the 50 that I'd asked for, I had to find 25 car spaces. I have 4 allocated to my factory, and the council would only let me rely on 5 on street. So they capped me at 20.
20 actual 20 people to come
in the tap room. Yeah.
So what did you do? Did you like schedule people in for like a 3-schooner quick session, and then everyone could just like rotate or something? Or
essentially, we did bookings only, and we did 2-hour sittings.
Oh yeah, yep.
So I was able to move through enough people to make it work.
Yeah.
You know, did we always abide by the 20 people? Sometimes we might have had a couple more. But I basically accepted that condition on the DA just to get the doors open.
Yeah.
With the expectation that once I'd opened and I could show real data from trade of how many. So we surveyed people for the first 3 months. So we had 3 months worth of data that told us how many people were actually driving. And the real number was 25%. So I was able to go back to council with all that survey data with another report from a different traffic consultant, because the first one stitched me up a little bit, just with one sentence that the council grabbed onto, as they do.
Yeah.
So we went back and I'm happy to say that as of last week, actually, you know, here's an exclusive
scoop.
Scoop. They call him
Scoop Lukianenko.
Scoop Lukianenko. we've been able to increase the tap room limit to 50 as of right now.
Brilliant. Have you been surprised by the amount of interest the local community has shown in the place, or did you like, I always knew it was going to be like this?
I want to say I knew, but I didn't know. I believed. I think there's that old thing. You can't believe something and know it at the same time.
Yep.
I believed it was there. Like I know that there's a really strong homebrew community in this area, particularly. Some absolute homebrew legends of Australian homebrew culture live in this area. Barry Cranston being one of them.
Baz.
I'm due to message Baz and get him in to come and do a brew with me.
Oh, nice. Baz was messaging on one of my recent podcast posts. I forget which, but he's always there and about on the Beer Hill Facebook page.
Love it. He's a good bloke. And
ripping.
So I don't know if I'm allowed to be anymore, but I was part of the ASB Brew Club. Which is the local brew club here.
Yeah.
And there are some absolute gun brewers that are involved in that. And you know, up at Lugano Cellars at the end of every month, having a few home brews and kind of giving each other feedback. And I was fortunate that over that period that I was waiting to open, I could take all my kind of test batches down to those guys and get their feedback. And, you know, there was some really solid stuff came out of those sessions. I don't remember all of it, because by the end of it, when they start passing around the Imperial Stouts, it gets a bit nasty.
Yeah.
But to have those resources to be able to call on to go, look, try it. Tell me if you think it's shit. Tell me how you think I could improve it. You know, there's beer judges in that group. There's guys like Barry. There's guys who've been brewing for, you know, a long, long time. And I feel really blessed. And I want to be able to give those guys back something. So So I'm going to try and organise a collab brew with Barry and maybe a couple of other guys.
Brilliant. Oh, that's awesome. It's awesome. I love talking to blokes like yourself who may or may not have underestimated the popularity of what they were doing. And for that reason, or maybe it's just purely financial, they went in pretty conservatively in terms of their like stainless steel, whether it be the size of the kit or their storage. And then within a very, very short time frame, they think, oh, shit, I should have done this or I should have got that. Where are you at? Have you already reached that sort of point now?
I'm probably past that point, to be honest. But it's more about my time because I am a one-man band or a jack of all trades. It's that thing of, you know, if I could put 400 or 500 liters into tank in 6 hours, 5-6 hours, rather than 10 hours, it would free me up to do a lot of other stuff that needs to be done. So there's things that probably aren't as, you know, I think we could have probably grown faster than we have. Mm-hmm. I could have grown faster than I have anyway. that collective noun thing again. I think it could have grown faster because I haven't been able to go out and talk to people and, you know, and get on tap in more places. I think we had, you know, the local RSL at Mortdale had us on tap for about 6 months. We got knocked off by a good deal from CAB, I think.
Those bastards.
Yep, that's all right. I'm going to ring him and see how the Peroni's going. it was a cheap Peroni. That's what knocked me off.
Shit.
So, you know, there's little things like that. But I tell you, there's been some really solid support from a couple, like the local Oatly IGA have carried our beers for the last, I think, six months. Tracy at Lugano Cellars has been sensational. Like she bought the first batch. She bought the first cans wholesale that I've ever sold.
Shout out to Tracy, you beautiful thing.
Mate, I messaged her the other day when we'd canned Nipah, the day we canned it.
Yep.
And I said, I've just got a French batch of Nipah. And she went, bring it up. I was like, brilliant. So, you know, she's a massive supporter of craft beer generally, but certainly of me and what I've done here in the local area.
I love it. Community at its heart. Just love it. Yep. Just love it. Now, mate, we know that you're a marketer from way back, but if I didn't already know that, I reckon I would have guessed it after one look of the list of the beers on your website. The names, they're all backed up with a story, and I bloody love it. I mean, those stories are about as Aussie as Bob Hawke in Budgie Smugglers, you know, chugging a schooner and taking a drag of a Winnie Blue or something like that. I just love them. Can you tell us a bit about where they all sort of came from?
Yeah, so the beers, I always wanted to have a local connection to the brewery itself and also to the beer name. So the Social Brewers is really the overarching, you know, the brewery name. It is what we stand for, the social side of having a beer, the coming together, all those sorts of things. So, you know, there's that. But then the beers themselves, I wanted to really connect with the local area. So Strider's Session Ale is actually named after a local walking group that's been active in the area for 30 or 40 years. They come down and had their Christmas get together at the brewery. You know, they're an amazing bunch of people. They wear bright orange t-shirts, and that's where the color on the can comes from.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
So, you know, there's that. Forest Road is the main kind of road that runs through this area.
Yep.
And it was originally cut in by convicts through forests. So, it was that thing of, you know, the local history. We've got a beer called Broken Bat, which is actually named in honour of Don Bradman.
He made his
first grade debut for St. George playing at Hurstville Oval down the road here, and he broke his bat on 98 before he got run out on 116. I probably got that number wrong, but somewhere there, you know. And that, I think that telling those little stories that some people know but not everyone knows and really – highlighting that aspect of the local area. It's an area that I think there's a lot of people have come from around here who have moved away and kind of look at it and go, oh, it's a bit of, you know, once upon a time it was a bit of a daggy area. And I think that's definitely changing and we should celebrate that local culture aspect and the locality of where we are. Yep. That's what I love about this area is it's so rich in those kind of stories.
Yeah. And so those brews, were they like the old homebrew recipes or as you were talking about before where you had a favourite and you tweaked it? Is that sort of how these all came about?
Yeah, well, the Forest Road IPA was an interesting one actually because I really like IPAs, but I do find that they punch me in the back of the throat a little bit with a really super bitter one. So I wanted to do one that was a bit less bitter. So I really lent towards English IPAs for the, from a style point of view. So, you know, a little bit more malt driven, a little bit lighter on the bitterness, nice solid dry hop, that marmalade-y kind of jammy flavor I really like.
Yes.
Yep. But I also love American hops.
Okay.
So I actually coin that one kind of an Anglo-American IPA.
Okay.
Because it does have a little bit of both worlds in there.
Yeah, nice.
And that was that's something that, you know, I brewed the first time, just a straight, I think I brewed a West Coast the first time I did an IPA. And while I absolutely loved it and thought it was great fun and you know, I might pull that recipe out again actually thinking about it and brew one up because I know they're quite popular.
But, yeah, they're having a bit of a resurgence, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
Oh, I love it.
But it's certainly like I wanted to also go for drinkability. So I want people to be able to sit down and have a couple and, you know, not feel like they're being knocked around by a beer.
Has that played a big part in you in developing this whole range here, knowing that you want them to be staying at your venue to drink these beers because you know that's where you're going to be able to, let's be honest here, that's where you make your best margins back at home base.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is our primary revenue driver at the moment.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was always the plan was to build the tap room and build that solid foundation first.
Yeah.
Before kind of reaching out into wholesale land. But
I forget who said it to me recently. They said something, I'd rather have someone sit down and drink 4 pints of a 3.5% beer than one of a 10.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I mean, it's not the only reason I brew beers like that, but that's part of it.
No, yeah.
I still enjoy, like, I've got a stout that's actually, so the stout that we do, Oatly Stout, Oatly is a local suburb as well, but it's an oat stout that was actually, so originally Wade brewed Coal Miner's Stout up at Four Hearts, which was a big hit. And I had an oat stout recipe that I really liked. So we had a chat and I was like, wouldn't it be cool if we actually did a beer that was those two things kind of rammed together, like that smokiness of Coal Miner's Stout with my oat stout, you know, the creamy oats and that sort of thing going on and the chocolatey kind of velvety nature of an oat stout. So we kind of he threw me a couple of points, not the whole recipe because he's like that. He doesn't like giving away his secret.
Asshole.
Well, no,
your brothers.
He may have sold the IP, but anyway.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah. I think it's more than just him not wanting to, because he is very forthcoming with most things.
Yeah.
So you know, he gave me a few things that were in there, and I was like, okay, well, I'll throw those into my oat stout recipe and see how it goes, and it absolutely nails it. I absolutely love the stout. It's a ripper. So, you know, there's a lot of, you know, that's a 6%er. So I'm not doing everything as, you know, 4 or 5%.
Yeah.
But certainly my IPA being a more English style is a little bit lower in the ABV.
Yeah.
It's also a factor of the equipment. So when I want to do, I'm looking at a very big beer, or not very big, not an Imperial, but pretty high. For our birthday beer this year, and I think I'm going to actually have to brew it to get a decent volume over at least 2, if not 3 batches, just because of the restrictions on my mash tun.
Yep. Yeah. Fair enough. Challenges of the small breweries.
Yeah. Absolutely. Hey,
it throws me to my next question beautifully. In terms of taking that step from home, sort of, to pro brewer, what do you think was the thing that you found the hardest in making that jump?
Consistency.
Okay.
Yeah. Definitely consistency. Like when you're a home brewer, you can kind of, it doesn't really matter. You know, I ran into this, so I'll throw some of that in there. Or, you know, I didn't hit my numbers, whatever.
That sounds like me.
It's come out 9% higher. Whee!
How did that happen?
You know, and if you're not accurate and if you're not consistent with a commercial product, when it's just in the tap room, it's okay. You can kind of get away with it. You throw another name on it and you put it up on the board at the right ABV and away you go.
Yep.
But when you're putting that into cans, and that's something that they've just started doing in-house with East Coast.
Yep.
When you're putting that into cans, you need to nail your numbers. You need to be in the ABV range, or that's not the product you said it was going to be. And if it gets tested one day out in the wild world, you're going to get into some trouble. So, you know, there's those aspects of it, I guess, that are the hardest from a consistency point of view. The brewing itself, I think, is just on a bigger scale. There's a lot more that can go wrong in terms of needing to focus a lot more on safety. Like, I know plenty of guys who homebrew and wear thongs and a singlet.
Yeah.
Whereas once you get into the commercial brewery world, you need to be very, very careful. I've had one or two near misses. One, I got caustic right under my eye.
Yep.
And that was a very, very stark and clear reminder to put the safety goggles on.
Goggles.
Every single time.
Will Tatchell from Van Diemen Brewing can attest to that. He had the same sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I work with Steve Henderson and Rockstar Brewer Program.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And he will probably message me later and go, "You're an idiot for not having your goggles on." and rightly so. But I think it's just those things are, I think it's easy to sometimes you get under pressure and you need to do something and it's got to be quick and don't really have the time to walk that 2 meters and get my goggles. I'm just going to do it. It'll be fine. You've got to kill that mindset real quick.
Yeah, no, I agree. Taking a look at your Instagram feed, it looks like there's always something going on at the venue. Have you made a point of that from the start? And is that important for you to become more than just a pub in sort of developing that whole community hub idea?
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a really good set of regulars who most of them I pretty much know by name.
Nice.
And I want to always give them a reason to come back.
Yep.
I think it's our competition isn't other breweries. It never will be other breweries.
No.
Even if one or two open in the area, which I sincerely hope they do, when people come in and say, "I'm thinking about opening a brewery," I'm like, "You're mad, but I hope you do it." It's just so I can not be the only stupid one. But, you know, we're competing against every other venue, every other nighttime activity, the movies, everything. You know, that's hospo. And that's, I think that's the thing that I kind of, you know, I knew already going in, but it's certainly hammered itself home. And, you know, when you're relying just on that tap room as your primary revenue source, you need to keep it really, really fresh and interesting for people.
Yep.
We're still trialing. You know, we're trying different stuff almost every week.
Yeah. I had to take a double take look tonight because Ben Harper is in the country as we speak. And whoever was playing the guitar on your most recent social brewers post tonight, I thought it was fucking Ben Harper. I was like, how the hell did you get Ben Harper in that little venue?
We do get some reasonable sized names, but
good.
We've got a guy named Luke O'Shea who's playing a private function. No, he used to work with my wife. He's doing
work
a private
network
function in March. But he's a multiple golden guitar winner, so he's got some cred. But no, the guy on Sunday was Goma Lapidau, who is just a wicked little Indonesian Rastafarian guy.
Real cool.
Yeah, there's a real cool little kind of subculture of Rasta guys from and girls from Indonesia that once you tap into, they all know each other, and it's just awesome. Like, it's such a cool vibe.
I like it.
But he does have a very Ben Harper vibe.
Yeah, he looked. I just had to take a double take. More importantly than the music, you have an NBA Jam arcade machine in venue, don't you?
I don't at the moment.
What?
I got one in as a trial. I'm getting one back because
you
Well, if it's quiet in the tap room, I get to play it. So,
are you any good?
No, I'm rubbish. Absolute rubbish.
Who's your favourite pairing of players or teams?
I have to go Charlotte Hornets every time. I'm 5'6". I'm a Muggsy Bogues fan.
I'm an original Charlotte Hornets fan from back in 1988 when they joined. And then, so my team are now the New Orleans Pelicans because they went Charlotte Hornets, then they moved and became Oklahoma City Hornets, whatever they were. Yeah. And then they became the New Orleans Hornets and then chose the Pelicans, the state bird, and gave the name back to the Charlotte Hornets new team, which were the Charlotte Bobcats.
Yeah.
But I still go back to them, and that my favourite pairing was Larry Johnson and Kendall Gill.
Yeah,
I didn't use Muggsy so much.
Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, I'm like I said, I'm 5'6", so I gravitated towards Muggsy when I was a kid.
Yeah, nice. I must admit, I did love using Sean Kemp, the Rain Man, for Seattle Supersonics back in those days. Yeah. But yeah, I love it. I'd love them to bring out the new version in the old look and feel of it, like not update it, make it all 3D and all that sort of bullshit, but just keep that side-scrolling thing with the new teams, and I'd be rocking Brandon Ingram and Zion Williamson with my team right now, that would be fantastic.
I'm not as up on NBA as I probably should be. I've got a basketballer in the house now, so I've got to get back on the...
Sorry, this is a beer podcast, but shout out to my mate Zion Williamson. He's a massive fan of this show, so yeah, he'll be listening. He's keen. Anyway, let's move on. The last thing I want to talk about, and I think this is really great, and I know you're not the only one that has been doing this, but I love the whole social media posts about the increasing cost because, let's be honest, they've gone insane in everything we do, but we as the beer-drinking public still seem to think that we can get our pints for the same price, even though you got your twice-yearly excise tax increase and all that sort of idea. Who started with that idea, and who did you steal it from? Because I know you're not the first. And are you getting some traction with it?
So I stole it from Sunshine Brewing on the Sunshine Coast.
Yep.
I will absolutely own steal it with pride is always been one of my mantras. Marketing. A good idea is a good idea, no matter who did it first. And I saw that and I was like, you know what? That is such a really awesome and transparent way to say we're putting our prices up. And I'd already decided prior to seeing that, you know, we had to do something. You know, the numbers on there, anyone can see if they jump on the Insta or Facebook page. But, you know, it's probably, I think, one of the most liked and commented posts that I've done in the last 12 months or 18 months.
Yeah.
And most of all the feedback's been really positive and it's been very much a, yep, totally, we get it.
Yeah.
A whole bunch of other breweries. I know the guys at Two Bays flicked us a comment on there and just went, yep, it's tough.
Yep.
You know, I don't think it'll be tough forever, but as a small business, you can't write out these costs.
The harsh reality is that it is really a fit. Like, you know, we saw Easy Times late last year going to administration. Your brother's old brewery, Ballistic, that he was working with, they've just, you know, had the same sort of thing happen. Like, this is going to be a tough year for breweries because of things like this and, you know, everything else COVID's brought along with it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's partly for some of those guys, it's probably a realignment as well.
Yeah.
You know, they've gone through a lot of growth in a very short period of time. For me and my brewery, it's purely about trying to keep up, you know, like, we're just growing into our kind of flow, and trying to make sure that we can continue to trade and exist in the future. I mean, I had a 25% rent increase, at the end of my first rental period. So
shit.
That's not all the fault of the market. You know, I signed a relatively short first period as a safety net.
Yep.
And it bit me in the ass. You know, like,
yep,
these things happen in business, but at the same time, there's a lot of other costs that I just don't think you could have foreseen. You know, I run a diesel ute that I do deliveries in. That's costing more and more to throw a tank of diesel into. So, you know, things like that. And you've got to recoup it somewhere. If you're not, great, people are going to be happy for a while, but I think eventually they'll be really unhappy when you have to close the doors.
Yep. Did you end up buying that second bike? Maybe you can turn it into a delivery vehicle.
I still have it.
Still got the cheap one, have you?
Yeah. No. I bought an expensive one after that.
Oh, you did? Did you, Roddy? Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Maybe you can turn that into a tricycle and just put cartons of beer or kegs on the
maybe.
Back.
Maybe. That could be an option.
Get some exercise. You know what happens at our age? We start to get the beer belly and all that sort of stuff. We've got to try and stay trim in some way.
Well, mate, I think I dropped, I'm back up a little bit now, but I dropped 12 kilos after I opened the brewery. Because I went from marketing, sitting behind a desk all day to carrying grain bags and stirring the mash and running around the brewery trying to make sure I didn't spill hot wort everywhere and, you know, things like that. So
that'll do it.
I keep getting told I need to put weight back on, which is a little scary. But
nobody said that to me ever in the last 10 years. Ever.
Oh, mate.
Unfortunately.
My brother-in-law is getting married and his fiance said, oh, we need to go on the bow diet. I was like, what? Stress and lots of exercise.
No, thank you. I'm all good. Oh, mate, look, I'm so glad we got to jump on and share this story because it's an absolute ripper. It's a little bit different to many others that we've had on here. It's a great one. And mate, hopefully you can get through this tough time with these bloody price increases.
Mate, we'll be good. I'm confident that we can trade And, you know, like I said, people have been very, very positive and very supportive. No one has had a negative word to say at the tap room when they're paying. I mean, realistically, we now, our price for a schooner now matches the pub that's up the road, that gets much, much better prices from their large suppliers. So, you know, our tap room is no more expensive than them.
And if you've done your numbers right in your business plan, you would have planned for some increases at least anyway. So not everything has been 100% surprise, even though it just still does suck.
Yeah, that, totally. I mean, you've got to build some. You've got to build some of that in. But I don't. Like I said, I don't think anyone's probably predicted exactly what's happened at the moment.
No. I think things are going to balance out a bit.
Yeah, look, things are positive. We've just got we're number 41 in the new release beers.
I saw that tonight.
Yeah, Gab's Hottest 100. Awesome. So
yep,
that's a stunning result in my opinion to rank there. You know, silver medal at the Indies for Broken Bat, silver and a bronze at the Adelaide Beer and Cider Festival for Striders and IPA, respectively. So, you know, hopefully we're doing the right things.
I can vouch for the Striders. I've enjoyed that Striders tonight. That's an absolute ripper.
Good stuff,
and
mate.
I love the story behind it, because you know I love that shit. So
yeah, well, hopefully, hopefully after the delivery delay. Everything else is in good nick.
Yeah. We got a couple of beers sent down from Bo to me, sent by one of the smaller couriers, and it took probably 2 weeks to get here. And when they did get here, I thought all the cans had burst inside, because the package, even though it was wrapped up in tape, was completely sopping wet, and the cans look like they've been bashed with a hammer. But I can vouch for the Striders tonight. It tastes great. So.
Well, fortunately the NEPA was fresh off the canning line the day I sent it. So, that should still be in pretty good nick.
Should be good. Love it. Mate, great story. Glad to hear you going well up there, and look forward to seeing what happens in the next 12 months. And congratulations on your first birthday coming up.
Thanks, mate. Really appreciate it, Chris. Good to talk to you,
mate.
Cheers.
Cheers to great beers. For listening. If you like the story and want to hear more, please subscribe via your favourite podcast service so that you are notified of new episodes. You can also rate the podcast on Apple and Spotify to help others find it. If you have an idea for a guest, shoot me a message via the socials. And speaking of them, if you aren't already, why don't you follow me on Instagram and Facebook? Help me spread this craft beer gospel. And finally, cheers to great beers.